Yeah.
Okay. Good morning. Good afternoon. We're having a special broadcast of the Labor Beat Radio Show here, and turning it into a podcast in the afternoon, so we can have an opportunity to talk to Steve Nopke, a good friend of ours, been on the program before in a number of capacities, going way back, but he's currently working in Ford Motor Company, I think in the state of Michigan, and right in the middle of this historic stew cooking, in the automobile industry and among auto workers across the country, at least in the U.S. right now, maybe broader, as Steve may know more activity than I know about. But anyway, I want to welcome Steve, who's been working for over 20 years in the automobile industry, and even for Ford, I believe. But and he knows the company well, and he knows the union well, and he's been active, for almost the entire time, I'm sure, in a number of different capacities. And right now he's, if he had to retire today, I'm not sure he would, because I think he's having some fun, coming into this fight with the company. So, and of course, my good friend and co-host and for many years here on the Labor Beat, JB Christensen, is tuned in before he heads off to our Central Labor Council meeting and this panel that's going to take place at Shepherd University later this evening. But in the meantime, I want to welcome Steve Nopke. And Steve, give us an update on what's happening at this. It's a big deal. Everybody can feel it.
Yeah. Well, thanks, John. Thanks for having me on, especially the other guys too. Let me just quickly go over what the issues are and then the status of what it is. I mean, the reason we're out, the three places are out, and the reason bargaining is so intense is that the president and the executive board campaigned in the process for running, running for office on a campaign of no tears and no concessions. And I think that's what they're doing. And so it's important to remember that when you hear the media sometimes will say, well, Sean Fain's he's too aggressive, or he's too this, he's too that. No, he's doing exactly what the membership wants. And these demands are not his demands. They're what the membership wants. And basically, it's ending the tier system where people take as many as 8 years to get to full wages, but also higher in at $16, $17 an hour, and which is absurd for working in an auto plant. So that's one area. The issue of the tiers has got to go. The second is the cost of living. In the last 4 years, membership, we've received the 6% raise over 4 years. And before that, we did the same thing. The prior contract was 6% over 4 years. And that just does nothing to keep up with inflation. But it also is reflective of the fact that the company is just stealing money from us. They've been making profits. I think the figure the union keeps quoting, which is accurate, is in the last 10 years, since 2013, they made over $250 billion. That's $1 billion in profits. In the first 6 months of this year, they made $21 billion in profits. So they have the money. So we're asking for the tier to eliminate the tiers, so all workers are paid the same. None of this, second class citizenship, a cost of living, wage increases to keep up with the inflation, and then pensions both for all workers as well as pension increases for those that are already already retired. They haven't had any money increase in about over 20 years, and those essentially are the main economic issues. There's one other that's out there that's the 32 hours work for 40 hours pay. And that whole thing fits into the fact that the profitability of these companies should allow them to let workers make a decision about working less and getting paid the same. Overtime would fall in afterwards, but it's really about a quality of life. And I think that's what we're looking for. And people say you can never get it. Well, we already have, Memorial Day. We had any of the holidays, you work 32 hours, you get 40 hours pay. Years ago, the UAW had a PPH policy, which is paid personal holidays. And that was to get to try to shorten the work week for people. So it's not like it's a brand new thing and the Europeans have been able to do it. So that's really the economic issues. The other issues are the question of the right to strike over plant closings. This is important because the companies have flat out lied about this and it broke the contract. And you don't have a lot of is really difficult. I will give you one example of how this can be done, though. Right after the last contract was signed, Ford Motor Company decided that they were not going to honor their investment in the Lorain, Ohio, the Lorain assembly plant. And they said, well, we're not going to put the money in. So the vice president at the time, Chuck Browning, said, okay, yes, you will. And what he did was he went to all the other Ford facilities, especially where they made the F-150s, and started loading up on safety grievances. Because safety grievances, you have the right to strike. So, for example, in the building in Dearborn, he went around to every driver. You know, you have these people drive tow motors or whatever you want to call them, high lows. That's how you move parts. You cannot run an operation without moving parts. He went to every one of them and said, you got your license. Well, nobody has their license anymore. Mine's probably about 14 years old. If I could, it's stuck in a toolbox that I lost. So I don't have a license, but I still have to move parts. So he went around to everyone and said, show me your license. Shut it down. He shut down probably 80% of the drivers. So Ford realized he was serious. So then they came back up and went from $900 million to $1.2 billion for that plant. So that's the seriousness with which these kind of negotiations have started off. And the right to strike over plant closings is all part of that. The other big issue around this is the electrical vehicle plants. Everybody's heard about the EVs and how they're challenging. They're going to change, and they are going to change things. I work in an engine plant. We're going to have probably lose half of our engine plant workers on this. Our view is that the batteries and all the parts that go into these electrical vehicles, those are powertrain. Companies have what they call powertrain division. It's your engines, your transmissions, your drive shafts, anything that powers the vehicle, that's called powertrain. That's all these batteries are, is they are powering the vehicle. They're part of our work. We should keep that. So we want to make sure that those come under the master contract. I'd say that the theme of this strike is corporate greed. It's all over the place. You see it all the time. Fame refers to it over and over and over again. And I mentioned the amount of profits, but that's been the thing. And one of the phrases he uses is, record profits mean record contracts. So that's kind of a summary. Let me just give you a couple of things to think about. One is the strategy that was going on. He's called a stand-up strike. And if you have an opportunity to go to UAW.org or Stand Up UAW, so the second one is more specific. They have a video, a four-minute video on what the stand-up strike is. And it refers to the sit-down strike and how it was done. And it's a very powerful video. It really shows, you know, the intensity of that the union has around these around this strike, and that's really important. And the strategy right now is called a stand-up strike. So he's pulled out one plant from each of the three big three, like he promised that he was going to go to all the big three. And now, if they don't get movement on negotiations come Friday at noon, he's going to make a second announcement of who's going to go on strike. And let me tell you, these are being greeted with a lot of anticipation. I was talking earlier, in the most of the assembly plants where you have a large section of younger workers who are under the two-tier system, they're dying to go out on strike. I mean, in my local, the Dearborn truck plant, they were pissed when they found out they weren't going on strike. They were mad as hell. And it's a testament to the seriousness that they said, all right, we'll stay in, but they got their hands up. They want to go out. And it's a reflection of the intensity that people have around this strike and around what we can get, because we are due. We're due this. It's not like we're asking for something we don't deserve. The profits have been high. The corporation, all three of the big three CEOs are making 21, 25, 29 million. Mary Barra from General Motors saying, most of my income comes from my productivity. Shit, she didn't put a damn bolt in a car. She didn't fight. She didn't put any fenders. She didn't machine anything. All she did, yeah, all right, she had an important job, but none of those stuff would go without us. And so I think that's the feeling of the people. So I think there's a lot of anxiety, a tremendous spirit on these picket lines, tremendous spirit. So let me finish there. If there's questions or whatever, I'll answer. Go ahead.
I remember from many years ago that in the peace workshops, you never really had to, demand that the boss give you, you know, the data, all this about how much, how do you, so you could actually measure your productivity, right? And, you know, and ask for a fair proportion of the gains that the company had. But in a piece workshop, it wasn't hard to do. And, you know, the people knew. They knew when they were, how much they were producing, and they knew how much the difference in cost was, and all this stuff. And so they were, everybody was very, very sharp about it. And it made it very easy for everybody in the shop to figure out when they were being stolen from. You know, and when the time study man that was coming around was going to, you know, figure out a way to not let you, you know, reach your 200%, even though you figured out how to get there. You know, they're going to take it back and move what your 200 now back to 125 or something. And that, so I think that productivity demand, you know, is, it's a powerful one, because it asks the real question about what portion of the wealth that we create, you know, needs to be in the pockets of the people who created it. You know, and if you're going to reserve something for investment, which in big projects, somebody has to do, why shouldn't it be, you know, as many public, you know, as opposed to just primarily private ways in which this gets done? So I think if you stick on the productivity question, it's a winner, you know, from a standpoint of economic justice. And that seems to be what's inspiring the justice issues that have, you know, devolved over the past 25 years, right?
Yeah, one of the plants that's being struck is the Toledo Jeep plant, and their chant is "No justice, no Jeeps."
I love that. Yeah,
right. No, great. Yeah, you hear that all. No justice, no Jeeps. And people that came to the rally on Friday, some of them were trying to say no justice, no peace. But I told the one guy, no, that's not what they're saying. It's no justice, no Jeeps. So
I saw that Sean Fain made a big point about, you know, talking to your members, but talking to the community and each place, what the impact of these issues is and can be. Do you have a... Are you guys doing anything like that, reaching out to the community so far? I mean, how's the political environment, and are the leaders wanting to associate themselves with you, or are they on vacation, not on the scene?
In Mission, they're tripping all over themselves to get on stage. at the rally on Friday, we had a big rally downtown on Friday. It featured Bernie Sanders. And, of course, you know, Bernie's just a great guy. I will say about Bernie, the one thing is he could get a $25,000 suit and it still look rumpled. That man cannot wear anything. He just gets up there and he you know, but he is really, really good. And he really did a nice job. But then he was part of the political leaders, but the governor was there, the lieutenant governor, and the secretary of state. All three of them spoke on, you know, in support of the UAW, and the demands. And then three of the Congress people, Haley and I forget her, I think Barbara, I think, or no, I forget her last name, but then Rashida Tlaib and Debbie Dingell was there. So the political leadership in the state of Michigan is pretty solid. You had people coming down from other places. I know John Fetterman drove in from Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania. You know, the senator from Pennsylvania. And, you know, Biden has been very good. I mean, Biden has said, you know, these companies are making corporate the record profits. And he sent his labor secretary or acting secretary, who, from my understanding, is a very, very pro-labor person, to try to kind of mediate some of this stuff, which mediation is fine. No one's got a problem with that. But, you know, really the companies have to decide how much losses they're going to take. That's really what it is.
Right.
And as far as the community, you know, churches, there's a lot of people that support the UAW, because UAW has been very active in the community for years. So there's a lot of churches, a lot of community organizations. People are just bringing food and stuff in. So, you know, we don't have to worry about scabs. There's nobody going to scab on us.
Well, that's also a favorable condition, right? I mean, unemployment is relatively low right now. And that would make it, that plus the community support would make it very difficult, if not impossible, you know, to recruit scabs on a big scale. So
There's nothing they can do. I mean, hell, they can barely get parts out with us working, you know. I mean, it's a complicated industry. It's not simple to do. You're not just standing there putting boxes, you know, put, you know, the old what was it, Lucille Ball thing, where you're putting, you know, candy in boxes. You have to do five and six different things. You have to turn a wrench, you have to pull something down, you know, all that stuff. It's not so simple. We once had a woman from the quality department come down who thought she knew what was we were you know, wanted to look at what we did. So we gave her gloves and put her on the line. She lasted about 40 minutes. She had to leave. She couldn't take it anymore. Now, we did give her the tougher job, putting it, installing install wire harnesses, but still, that's, you know, somebody has to do that anyway. So, you know, they, you know, these jobs are not simple. And so there's no, they're not going to get these plants up and running. They're just going to shut them down.
So it, yeah, right. But I remember once the paper companies used to hire professional security forces and scabs, not to get the work done, but to create picket line provocations. You know, they were, and
We
then
got
they get
10,000
charged.
people in our local. They don't want to
Oh,
provoke
there
all.
you go. Okay. Anyway, but so do you, around the country is not every place is Michigan with respect to the auto industry, but you got plants in California, right? And around the
There,
country, how's it looking in those places?
they got them in West Virginia, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Well, we got the parts plant here in Martinsburg, right?
Right. No,
Right.
but
Well,
we have a Toyota manufacturing plant in West Virginia.
right.
They're non-union, though. They're not union.
No.
Well, in terms of the union places, right now the strikes are going on in Michigan, Ohio, and Missouri. And the other places that there is a significant UAW Big Three, you know, plants would be Illinois, some Wisconsin, Indiana, Kansas City, you know, Kansas City, and I think that there's in both Missouri and Kansas, Kentucky. Kentucky's got a big truck plant down there, Kentucky Truck and a Kentucky Assembly. There's probably 7,000-8,000 people down there. And then around the country, you have parts depots. So if all of Ford goes out, or all of GM goes out, or all of Chrysler goes out, then there's going to be, you know, 40 or 50 parts depots around the country that'll be on strike. So that'll be the opportunity for people in the community to help out those smaller places, because those parts won't move. But generally, it's still the Midwest. The product auto production.
Now you're from
You froze a little bit there.
California, Georgia. We used to have big plants down there. So
Yeah, he's freezing up.
I am.
you're breaking up a little bit on the last sentence there, Steve. You got your letter.
I was just going to say
I
that
can hear.
it's consolidated in the Midwest for the most part right now.
Okay. All right. Well, so this Friday, they're talking about announcing a expansion of the strike, correct? And yes, yet
Yes.
on locations. Okay. All right. You would think that, well, that's an interesting thing. Do you have any sense about whether the company anticipated this tactic of a rolling kind of strike, or do you, or whether they prepared for it, or do they catch them by surprise, or any sense about how prepared they are for this entire affair?
Well, in my building, on the night before, what was it, Thursday night was the announcement. They, you know, we were going to set up, you know, we machine engine blocks and that kind of thing. So they ran all the machines out. So they were prepared for a strike. Well, when the strike didn't occur, it took 45 minutes to an hour or more just to get back up again. So they didn't know what was going on. Now, I don't know what it's like in the assembly plants and the other things. You can kind of just stop the machines. You know, the line, but I think that I don't. I think the strategy is has the company a little confused. They don't quite know what to do. Give you an example. They've shut down two in the steel workers have a plant, have a steel plant. You know, I think it's Granite City somewhere in Missouri, and they had to shut down because their orders were cut back. A lot within the auto industry, you have a number of parts suppliers who autos are going to be cut back, including just even within the big three, certain plants that feed these plants are going to be down. That's why the one possibility is that if they shut down all of the powertrain plants this time around, the assembly plants won't be able to go anywhere. They won't be able to run. So that's what the strategy is designed to do. It's also designed to extend as long as possible strike benefits. We have $840 million strike fund, but if everybody went out, including some strikes we have in other places, that fund would be out in about 11 weeks or so. So they're trying to extend that.
Right, right. Well, and then I remember we had a deal with Westinghouse once where we tried that tactic of the rolling strike and the company locked us out. So, but that's okay. They didn't win. They thought that would scare us, and you know we were never scared by low strike funds in the UE. So it worked out okay. But well, I'm so comforted by the fact that it seems like the president and at least the which means I would think any relief for the automobile companies, if they decided to get, you know, really nasty and, you know, return to their own 1930s style tactics. So I think that's a good thing. They're not going to be able to, I don't think, see how they're going to be able to do that. I did hear yesterday that Trump is planning on coming up to your state and, you know, adding some sort of flame to the fire. Is that true?
Yeah, apparently he comes up. Sean Fain made a really strong statement saying how our fight is with a billionaire class, and we don't need to be having people like Donald Trump in office and trying to tell us what to do. So if he comes to the picket line, he's going to be in for a pretty rude awakening. Supposedly, he's going to have a speech downtown. I don't know whether there's going to be a picket line down there. You know, they keep talking about how they're going to get building trades and auto workers to come here and talk. We'll see. I mean, we're getting pretty good at throwing up picket lines now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, in terms of, you know, within the union and amongst the membership, since it's clear to me that the leadership has been trying to prepare the members and they're giving a lot of thought to the tactics. And but then the question comes up, you know, is the communication lines and some sense that whatever happens, the leadership is going to tell people the truth. Is that a fairly strong feeling? Are people feeling pretty good about that? Or
yeah, what Sean Fain has done for the last, I think maybe 4 weeks, is he has a Wednesday, 4 or 5 weeks, he has a Wednesday evening a live stream where he lays out what the demands are. And 3 weeks ago, what he did was he put on the screen what our demands were on each of the economic issues and what Ford Motor Company had put it on the table. And this is the first time this has ever happened, this kind of transparency. And the next day in the shop, people are talking about this. They go, you know, it's great to see what the company's actually talking about, as opposed to everything's all hush hush and quiet. And the next thing you know, you got an agreement and you got to sign it in 3 days. Well, now it's different. And it's a result of the way that they came into office through the one member, one vote. And this is what they said as part of their program. And this is what's happened. So it's very transparent. People know. I mean, you know, some people, not everybody knows, because some people don't pay attention to anything. But, you know, you still got some of that. But more and more people, I mean, the conversations about it, people say, yeah, I saw Sean Fain last night. And I'd say the vast majority of workers understand what the issues are. And there are a handful that say, you know, Jesus, he offered 20%. That's really good. Well, you know, it's not enough. And so that's what they're talking about. So yeah, the transparency has been very, very important. Some locals are better than others. There's some that have had a lot of rallies, a lot of stuff going on. But overall, at the rally on Friday, you saw a tremendous unity with all the different, you know, I wouldn't say factions, but there were people that maybe saw things a little bit different. They all came together at that rally. It was very powerful.
What's the Republican Party doing in your area in connection with this? Anything? Are they having parties or expensive dinners with the insurance companies, or
You know, I'll be honest, I don't know, and I don't really care what they're doing right now.
What they're up to.
Yeah, they're making statements about, oh, you know, we need to get a fair sell. Nobody in their right mind is going to come out and say, you know, these guys are overpaid and we did, you know, companies need to, outside of maybe Donald Trump. But for the most part, they're just being quiet because they got nothing to say that would do them any benefit. You know, they're just getting clobbered on this stuff. They're just taking the beating and taking it.
Right.
Politically, I mean.
All right. Well, how's the young people in the you feel pretty optimistic about the outcome?
I do. I mean, I think it's already we're going to get a better contract. There's no doubt about it. I think the question really just remains, how long can we fight? How tenacious can we stay fighting as to what we're going to get? And I think, you know, what's important, I think, is that if what you don't get this time, you can set the stage for next time. That's not something you can really talk to too many of the younger workers about. And they shouldn't have to wait. You know, they shouldn't have to be patient. They've been patient for way too long. But I do think that the tiers are going to be either eliminated or modified to a certain point. When I came in, when I hired 29 years ago, you came in and every 6 months you got a raise. And you worked out to 36 months, you got full pay. This kind of shows my age. When I was 19, I worked at Ford in Cleveland, and there it was 90 days. You got your full pay. So I think that there's been a system, and I think what the membership is saying, let's go back to that 90 days. If they don't know you're a good enough worker after 90 days, then they can get rid of you up to 89 days. But if you're there past 90, then you should get paid what everybody else gets paid. Your benefits should be the same. And I think that's driving the younger workers, and that's why there's such a militancy there.
All right.
And there's a support among everybody else too. Everybody thinks that they should be brought up because everybody knows. The other thing you got to remember, a lot of people have their kids in there. You know, you have two or three kids working there, and damn, you know, they need to get the same thing. Dad, what are you making? Well, you know.
So. What are the permatemps? We heard about that, I think, in the UPS contest there. Is that a phenomenon too, where they have a lot of temporary workers at the
Plant? What they're called is permanent temps. And what it is you're temporary until they hire you full time. And so there's a guy you have a lot of off standard jobs, meaning a job that they have to have somebody to do, but it's not part of their regular team, you know, part of the regular team. For example, this guy's an inspector. Yes, because the parts coming in from the foundry aren't always good. So that's not a regular job. But right now he's been there for a year and 2 months. He hasn't gotten a raise. He's been a permanent temp for a year. So, you know, and what the union is saying is, you want to have temporary, he's doing like the old days. All right, you have 89 day temps just to fill in for vacation or whatever. And then people know that. But everybody after that, 90 days, boom, you're full time.
Right.
I think our situation is a little different than the UPS.
Yeah. I mean, they have a part-time workforce that's really very substantial. I don't know how many of them are temporary, but you know, there's not a lot of part-time work in GM or in auto, right?
No, the way the part-time work is that you're brought in for, you know, you're either on a 4-10 hour schedule, four days, 10 hours, but they can work you up to 12 hours. Contract gives the company the right to mandatory overtime, 12 hours plus every other Sunday, because they work this four-tier system. So Saturday is not available. Sunday's the only day they can do it. So what they do is that they work you that, and then maybe they send you home. So, for example, if you're real low seniority, you might get that home a day early or whatever. So the amount of hours you work isn't guaranteed. That's the problem with the temp system and the lower seniority people. They can't really plan anything.
Right.
And they can hold that over your head, too, when it comes time to assign jobs.
Yeah, you're right. They they end up doing it a lot of different ways. I mean, the newer workers get screwed every which way.
Yeah, it's time to strike.
Already,
thank you for the retired position. Right.
I applaud Sean Fain. I have a lot of respect for this guy. I had no idea who he was or how he was, but everything I see, I agree with. I think the guy is a real fighter, and he's the guy for the job right now for you guys.
I agree. I think it's also important to remember that, you know, part of the way they came into the position is there's an administrative caucus, which is, depending on how old you are, either it's the administrative caucus or the Reuther caucus. And I knew enough guys that were banged heads with Reuther that they always called it the Reuther caucus. In fact, a good friend of mine passed away 20 some years ago, Dave Moore, was one of the real left wing guys in Local 600. And he ran against Reuther, the Reuther slate, and he got elected. He was a vice president in the building he was in. And then they blacklisted him. They wouldn't let him run. He refused to, go to the HUAC and tell names. So Reuther and them, they blacklisted him for 9 years. So whenever he referred to Reuther, it was never Walter Reuther, was that redheaded son of a bitch.
That's pretty cool.
Also, he kind of was the first to break national ranks and go with a 5-year contract too, right? I mean, and that raises the question: is are they contemplating another 5-year contract given this inflation thing we're into recently and still? I think somewhat.
I don't know. I don't know. That's been a topic yet. I think what I've heard is something they refer to a four and a half year contract or 4.5 years, but I don't know whether that's how they're going to figure that. I wouldn't be able to answer that, John, because it hasn't really come up publicly much.
Well, so they don't actually have a cost of living formula anymore, do they? Right. I mean, most of when the 80s came, that just the cost of living formulas were. You know, the corporation sort of united to get rid of them.
We lost ours in 2008. I had it when I was about 6 years. What they did was, it was a pretty decent, at the end of the it would roll over every contract. You get up to $1 an hour cost of living by the end of the contract, and then they'd roll that into your wages plus a percentage, plus a 3%. So in the 90s, there was some pretty decent money made, and there was, we kind of kept up. But once 2000s hit, and especially when the crash came in 2008, everything went out the window. We lost raises. We lost holidays. They started subcontracting out work. Then we lost the cleaners. Everybody used to have cleaners. A building would have 40, 50, 60 cleaners. They were basically higher seniority workers, mostly guys that, their bodies were kind of burn out. And so they made them clean. They had the cleaners that it was a lower wage level, but it was an easier job. They did away with cleaners and all that kind of a thing. So they tried to subcontract a bunch of stuff that they realized they just couldn't do, but they did cut some of that. But 2008 was when the industry went down. We made concessions with the agreement that we would, when times got better, they'd come back, and they never did. So they lied to us. It's not much of a surprise, but
no. So I know none of your demands involve your medical plan, so you're happy with that?
Yeah, we've got really good medical. They under the Obama administration was called the Cadillac plan. No, they won't touch that. I mean, the thing about the medical is that, and it's been raised, is that when you figure that in with national health care, that wouldn't figure the same way. But right now, I think most people would in most UAW members would be a little skeptical about that. Even though it can be explained, but right now the healthcare is pretty good.
All right. Well, that's good. Well, John, this has been great. Can we get Steve back in a couple weeks or?
Oh, I think we should try to get Steve back and give it, because obviously the vents are developing very rapidly, and we're looking for ways to help here.
And what we could do is just be on notice with Steve, and whatever he thinks, he's got some up and coming information, he can text you or call you, and we can set something on the fly.
You can set it up. Yeah. And then can podcast it almost immediately.
Let me make one thing that took place the other day is there was a group of Kroger workers that worked at the Kroger grocery stores, and they really have been following the UAW stuff and excited about Sean Fain when he threw the Stellantis demands in the trash can. They thought that they were just ecstatic about that. But what they did was they got about seven or eight of them, and they all wrote a handmade sign that said, "I stand with the UAW." And they took pictures of it and they put it out on social media. And so that stuff is one of the ways of kind of showing support from different unions and different groupings. So, you know, now you guys are all kind of old, so you might not know how to do all that shit, but the younger guys can figure it out.
A little credit, Steve.
Just kidding.
Out in front of
speaking more about myself.
JB, would you stand out in front of that place there over there near the IVW office and you know, with a we support the UAW in front of the
do the same thing at dealerships, you know, get signs, just say hey, I support UAW, get pictures and get on the, you know, get the press around. So that
kind of our labor council has 2,800 members in seven counties and 25 different organizations. And so we can get the word out amongst our members, and they're the ones that are really going to support anyway. And plus their families and their friends. And, you know, it's like anything else. You got to network and get the word out, and people will, you know, adopt your whatever it is cause that you have. And in this case, it's everybody's cause. It's everybody's cause. And that's why you guys are going to win this, because everybody's getting underpaid and the rich are getting richer. And Bernie's right. You know, John and I have been Bernie fans since the beginning. John actually met Bernie several times back when he was in Vermont.
He's a UA guy.
Yeah. We're the whole country's behind you guys. So you got to win.
Yeah, we've got some guys that come into the plant from the laborers union doing construction stuff that our skilled trades aren't in a position to do. So there's about a dozen of them. And they're walking in one day, about 2-3 days ago or last week sometime. And one of the guys, I started talking, one of the guys says, yeah, he goes, man, we all support you. He goes, what you get, we get. He goes, you know, we got a contract coming up, but if you guys get a really good contract, it sets a standard. And that's really, you always used to be the case that the UAW contract set the standard for everybody else. It hasn't been that way for a while. And so now we're trying to get back to that. And I think, and it is true. And it also enlivens and picks up the spirits of the rest of the labor movement. When you see somebody do this stuff, that's where the Teamster strike would have been so powerful. Shit. Everybody knows a Teamster.
Yeah.
That's right. Anyway, I think we're all waiting for the next one to fall, and I think people are getting prepared. The other flip side of what you just said, if the UAW wins, we all win. As if the UAW loses, we all lose. And
that's
a very serious proposition. So we cannot lose.
We are not going
to. We have to take that attitude, you know, that everything's on the table. And so.
Well, it's a real fight.
Tonight at the. I'm sure at the panel discussion at Shepherd University, as a focus that I'm sure everybody in the labor movement, along with the Hollywood, with the writers and strike that's going on, which is also a pretty important battle. So anyway, I want to thank you, Steve, so much for joining us, and we'll get back to you, get other reports, and call us if you need us to spread the word about any old thing that
anything.
Well, the union's starting to put together some community action stuff, and I'll get it to you, John. No problem at all.
All right. That's great.
Appreciate being on the program. Thanks a lot.
Take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next.
All right.